Hello and welcome to Creative Instinct on RN, RA and the web. I'm Michael Sheriffs. Now, the Museum of Old and New Art, or MONA, in Tasmania, isn't noted for its elegant still lifes or heroic landscapes. It was built just over a year ago now by the millionaire gambler David Walsh to house his private art collection. MONA is often described, including by David Walsh himself, as a temple to sex and death, and in it you can see the bizarre, the beautiful, the confronting, and the just plain silly. For its first birthday, MONA has a survey show of one of David Walsh's favourite artists, Wim Delvoye, who's given us the cloaca, a machine that turns food into excrement, and a farm of tattooed pigs. Wim Delvoye has often defended himself against claims of animal cruelty because the pigs' backs are tattooed while they're living, and once they're slaughtered, their tattooed backs are tanned and exhibited in galleries around the world, including at MONA. David Walsh bought one of the pig skins a few years back. It's called Untitled Osama, and he also has one of Wim Delvoye's cloacas. For his survey show, Delvoye has brought along a colony of cloacas. And Deborah McCoy was in Hobart to see the show and to talk to the Belgian artist about having his name forever associated with a device that replicates the human digestive system. And just so you're prepared, there's some strong language and adult themes to come.
Yeah, that will last. You know, shit sticks a little. So when people meet, then they just always have a shitty association.
And they stink, these things. So it's kind of gross to be in the vicinity of them. And anyway, of these five, there were different ones, two of which were working and, you know, had recently defecated. Interestingly, some of the staff must find the experience of working around them unpleasant because the floor had been recently cleaned with some kind of disinfectant. So there was this citrus smell, you know, competing with the fecal smell.
It's not always easy, yeah? I mean, I suspect I'm missing out on a few chances in the love market because people associate me with shit. I'm a very, very clean person and I wash my hands like 70 times a day and I every morning take a bath and I'm a very, very tidy person. I mean, I also don't have any tattoos. I'm like an ideal son-in-law. I could even be a good Jew. I don't eat pigs, and I'm a vegetarian. I'm always kosher. How I am is nearly the opposite of my work.
Well, my name is Tim Steiner. I'm 35 years old. I'm from Zurich, Switzerland. I work in art. I make music on the side. I'm a very competent babysitter, so I'm a project individual, a bit of everything. It was in 2006 that Wim was part of a group show in a gallery in Zurich in which my girlfriend was working. And for many years he had been looking for a person that he could do the same concept with as with the tattooed pigs, to tattoo while living, to sell while alive, and then remove and frame the piece after the individual or the pig has passed away. And he didn't find anybody he was looking for a long time. He asked my girlfriend in the gallery if she knew somebody that may be interested in a project like that. She gave me a call, I said yes, and that was basically the beginning of the project.
Well, I'm not surprised that it took him a while to find someone to do it, because it is the sort of project that takes over your life and actually takes over your death to some extent too.
Well, the death part for me is not relevant. I won't be there anymore. But the life part, you're right, it's had an enormous impact. And people say, oh, Tim, you're the art piece. I just see myself as the frame. I don't get asked to go places. The tattoo gets asked to go places. And for the moment, I just have to go with it. So I see it more like that.
So in the gallery, Tim Steiner becomes Tattoo Tim, sitting for hours on a plinth, stripped to the waist, revealing his complex tattoo, which includes an image of the Madonna, roses and skulls and bats. In 2008, Tim's back was sold to a private collector in Germany for 150,000 euro. That's about 180,000 Australian dollars.
The owner of the piece has the right to exhibit me 4 times per year. In agreement with me, of course. There's nothing in this project that can be done without my agreement. So at least 4 times a year, he can come and tell me where and how he wants me to be exhibited. He also has the right to resell me, which is an important aspect for Wim, the artist, the secondary market part. And he has the right to keep the piece nicely, rectangularly framed after I pass away.
So how do you think about that? Because you said at the beginning, you're dead, it doesn't affect you. But how have you rationalized that in your mind to come to that conclusion?
I once made a statement where I said that, you know, we all in a way search for permanence. And even though it's not me, if this all works out, there will be an element of permanence. And I like the idea that possibly my kids or my grandkids can walk into a museum one day and say, look, there's Dad, or what's left of him. I find that really, really enticing and very, very special. And what's also exciting for me is that, you know, it's an old idea, this with the tattooed piece of art, but Wim turned it into a reality. And to be part of that, to be the first one to do it. If Wim had come and said, would you like to be the 15th person that I tattoo and sell, I would have said, no, what's the point of that? But until now, I'm the only guy, and that, you need to understand, Wim didn't come with a master plan. He didn't say, this is how it's going to work. This, he said, I have an idea. I don't know if it's going to work, but let's try it. So it was all very, very new, fresh water for us.
But you may not, in fact, be the first, because you're a very fit, healthy young man. You may live 50, 60 years. It's almost impossible to know what will be exhibited in galleries True. In 50 or 60 years,
Absolutely.
Or if galleries actually exist in that way.
Oh, yeah. No, but I'm the first that was sold. Mm. And that's interesting and important to me.
So what happens to your ideas about self when you are an object that can be traded?
Oh, I think that's overestimated. I don't believe in, personally, I don't really don't believe in an active self. I believe in a reactionary self. And we don't choose to be what we are. We're made to be what we are. And I was made to be somebody that looks at life and wants to experience as much, at least once, as possible. And that's why I immediately and spontaneously said, yes, I want to be part of this project, because it will open doors in my life that otherwise would have stayed shut.
And what about the artwork that is your back? Do you have any say in what it is, how it develops?
You mean the way that it looks?
Yes, in what is depicted on your back.
Oh, no. And that's important. You see, for Wim, it's playing with two art cultures. It's the low art culture, the world of tattooing, and the high art culture, the world that we're playing in right now. And for Wim, it was important that I have no personal attachment to the piece, because he says tattooing solely exists that the individual that wears the tattoos can represent a part of themselves. He says, but the idea is ridiculed when you carry something that you have no way to identify with. And this is what happened in this case, because the tattoo was previously already on one of Wim's pigs called Sylvie. And he came with a design for the pig and he said, this is what I want you to have. And we only made slight adjustments and had to shrink it because I have less space on my body than the pig does. But I had basically no say in what it was going to be. Had I been fully against it, then we wouldn't have done it. I mean, naturally, I saw it and I said, it's, you know, it appeals to me, it's nice, but I don't look at the piece and have a personal association to it, not at all.
Is there anything that you wouldn't accept? Is there a symbol or an icon that you would say, no, I'm not having that on my back?
I'm not going to mess with the world of Islam, honestly. That's, you know, I think provoking and thought-provoking is a positive thing, but I don't want to endanger myself. And looking at the things that have happened in, you know, satirical views of the Islamic religion and things like that, that's something, a territory I don't want to mess with.
Yeah, so you're entering the Wim Delvoye exhibition, and you're going in one direction, so we just ask that you keep going in that one direction, and we just ask that you don't touch the artwork.
What exactly is behind it? But for me, central points for Wim are religion and science. One of the biggest and most dangerous things that we've had in our life, in many aspects, has been religion. And it's a shame that we cannot just openly criticize it, because it's always saying, you cannot be disrespectful to this. Well, why not? He's not being disrespectful, he's questioning things, as he will do with many other things, and as you will see here with the Stations of the Cross. The piece that we're going to go look at now is the 12 last stations of Jesus, depicted through rats. Now, you bring that up, and immediately for people, it has an enormous shock value. But when you think about it and come down a little bit, and again, scientifically, genetically, how big is the difference between us and rats? It's not that much. You know, we're living, breathing animals just like they are. We're in a different formation, but there's this association to this animal, the rat. It's dirty, it's stinky.
The Stations of the Cross in Christian imagery shows Christ carrying the cross from the place of his sentencing to the site of his crucifixion. Wim Delvoye has used rats in his recreation, and on the walls of his exhibition at David Walter's Museum of Old and New Art in Hobart, there are a series of radiographs, ghostly X-ray images of posed rats, in which you can see their skeletons, skulls and intestines.
The Stations of the Cross. A lot of works have something to do with religion, often Roman Catholicism, or sometimes I'm also been interested in the Muslim, even before September 11. And religion is an interesting thing to me, although, again, and this is also a contrast going on with my private life, I'm agnostic. I kind of know for sure there's no religion necessary or gods necessary. I'm sharing completely the same views as David Walsh. Mm-hmm. But Catholicism is an interesting religion. It's half pagan and it allows imagery. So for an artist, Roman Catholicism is way more a useful religion than some religions where they don't allow paintings or sculptures. Then I think also art is a religion. It's just another religion. Art and religion are very intertwined.
So, yes, they are. And if you're going to take on something and you use religious iconography or religious ideas, then you can be guaranteed that it's going to provoke a reaction. Is that what you're interested in?
No. In a way, what's so beautiful about cloaca is that everybody shits and the joke is not at the cost of anybody. But when I'm doing a joke about Roman Catholicism, I am a Roman Catholic person. I am baptized, and my people, my parents, they kind of hope I am a Roman Catholic person. We come from that kind of culture. And basically, the only question this work says, you know, I'm employing a radiography for it, and each piece is like saying, hey, where's the soul?
But you're using the bodies of rodents in this X-ray, and including a crucified rodent.
Yeah.
That has to be seen as deliberately provocative?
No. First of all, you don't see it. It's a radiograph. So it's not even a photograph. Photo means light. So photographs of cruelty doesn't legally count for me. It's a radiograph of cruelty. Then we have not been cruel to any rodent. We raised the rodents on a special diet because I wanted to have the intestines rendered, so we gave them contraster.
So you can see them, they're quite visible in the radiographs.
Yes, and then we killed them in a very humane way and with gas. You know, these rodents came from a pet shop and were going to be fed to snakes. So we didn't do that. We gave them a bit of a longer life because we needed to get this contraster in their intestines. And I never crucified a live rodent. I actually used rodents who were dead.
Aside from the cruelty aspect, which has been raised about your work many times and you've addressed, aside from that, it's also the symbolism, which you as an artist and as a Catholic know is very strong, and that's the symbol of a rat on the cross, or Osama bin Laden on a pig skin. They're very potent things that you're dealing with there.
Yes, but you know, people, they get to see from morning till evening thousands of images on YouTube and Google and TV, magazines, on their telephone, they get these images. And it's very difficult to do something meaningful or something where people are not immunized for. And so it is a challenge nowadays for an artist. The whole 20th century was about underlining that we lost the battle against more popular media. Mm. We don't have a public. Nobody likes contemporary art. And if they do like contemporary art, it's often me. So I kind of very aware that I have a larger public than most artists. If artists would just do monochromes or abstract paintings, they'd feel very lonely. I kind of want my art to communicate with the public. I want to exist outside the museum walls, and I want to have art thrown to the lions, and the masses need to judge my work. I'm also aware that the line between art and non-art is very thin, or it's nearly imagined. There's nothing like an intrinsic art value in the art works. It's something that is made by consensus, by the public, and is also in flux. In fluxus, it's every day something else.
So this is a replica of the digestive system. We feed it twice a day, and it poos once a day. So we feed it at 11 o'clock.
We are reinterpreting art pieces every day. We can change our mind. That's the wonderful thing. We are not for sure.
Just go through the process with you, and then we'll feed it, and then if there's any questions afterwards, you can ask them. So first of all, we collect some food from the cafe upstairs. Today we've got two chicken Caesar wraps. So 8 glasses of water just to help the machine keep regular. Now we feed it through the mouth here, which is the sink. Through to the incinerator at the bottom, this acts as the teeth, so it grinds it up. So it's a bit noisy, so I probably won't talk much while this is going. You will notice the first cylinder will start filling up as the water and the
Even though he said he wouldn't, Wim Delvoye custom-built a cloaca for David Walter's Tasmanian Museum. Cloacas aren't usually sold. His tattoo work is, though, and he has collectors spread from Tasmania to Germany and India. And while he enjoys that international reputation, Wim Delvoye sees himself as a Belgian artist. Like much of Europe hit by troubles in the EU, Belgium has just had its credit rating downgraded. The latest financial problems have added to tensions there as the Belgian government tries to introduce austerity measures in a divided country. The Flemish North sees the French-speaking South as a financial burden, and Wim Delvoye thinks all of this is bad for local culture.
I'm actually running in trouble in my country because I see myself as a Belgian artist. I have never been favoring the idea of splitting up. My philosophy has been it's better to be one dumb country than two. And the people don't forgive me. So culturally, I'm quite isolated in the northern part of Belgium. The Flemish are the most aggressive of the two, and they are the ones who want to split up, and they're the penny fuckers who think they are giving too much money to the south, and in a way they kind of like lose themselves into details why the whole economy is crumbling down for way other, more other reasons. Like, it's just complete decadence. We are a zombie economy. 40% of our economy is just functionaries, the government itself. I mean, we close to Greece. If you look at the numbers, then it's only the beginning of the problem. You know, it's like the old Byzantine Empire, and all the governors and all the people are just discussing the sex of angels while the whole economy is crumbling down. We are a zombie economy. We are not making any values, and I'm a worried Belgian.
I'm Michaela Boland, national arts writer at the Australian newspaper.
You met Wim Delvoye, you talked to him. How did you find him? What kinds of things do you think might motivate him?
I think he's a really clever artist, and seeing all of his work in a survey made it easier to understand him, because on the one hand you've got these headline seeking items like the cloaca machine, and you can talk about them as we've spent a lot of time talking about them. And also Tattoo Tim does create an interesting conundrum through which we think about commodification of human beings and individual rights and so on. But at the other end of the scale, you have this beautiful metalwork, which is infinitely collectible, which is another interesting point of discussion with this artist, because he doesn't do a lot of this work himself. He works with craftsmen, and he's credited with the idea, but not necessarily with the execution. And, you know, that triggers the debate too of what is it to be an artist? Is it okay to just have the idea, or should you be executing the items as well? And all that sort of feeds into the industry of Wim d'Auvoir, because on the one hand he said, oh, none of my cloaca machines are for sale. David Walsh, the owner of Mona, had to really convince me to sell him one of these machines. Well, you know, nice. However, that's not how you sustain an industry like that. That amount of research and development that goes into creating these is infinitely expensive, and you've got to pay for it somehow. Well, the way he's paying for it is with these other collectible items at the other end of his oeuvre.
So these are, as you say, these are objects that demonstrate an enormous amount of craft and attention to detail. Metal that's been carved and turned, and it's, as we say, it's light and beautifully decorative.
And especially, I guess, because it's rendered from such a heavy material, the fact that he achieves this lightness is credit to him. It's no question a beautiful work.
And this metalwork at the exhibition ranges from a cement truck, life-sized truck, carved in delicate filigree that's perhaps not quite so collectible, but there are bronze and silver sculptures with curving double helix forms, and there are beautiful twisted Gothic towers too.
Does he do all of this work himself?
No.
Like the man says, he gets the idea and other
exactly.
people actually
Exactly, that's what I've come to later.
With all of it.
A majority, you know, he does. I mean, the drawings, the design drawings, the architectural drawings, it's all his, his work. But it's not possible for him to.
No, no, because when I'm looking at all the detail,
you must be the most buried artist on the planet. Which is the idea behind the conceptual art, is that he says, I'm gonna have the idea, and then I'm gonna use my team that they can turn this idea into a reality.
Making this kind of work, you need to be a little bit more entrepreneurial and less alcoholic than an expressionist artist. For this type of work, you need to be a good employer, you need to be a bit of an entrepreneur, responsible person. So I'm having a quite regular life, I'm quite domestic, I don't go out too much, and we at home we have like 6, 7, sometimes 8 people. And they're all people who are better than me in some way. Like, they know how to handle these computers and all these new programs, while I'm quite digiphobic. So I don't take people who are less than me, and they can keep my promises.
But then there is a collaboration too, isn't there? I mean, how do you recognize their skill and their craft in your work? How do you acknowledge their contribution?
Oh, I'm a Capricorn. I always know how to use people, and I take out the best, and I have a very good nose for knowing this guy's smart, this guy's not so smart, or this guy is useful, or this guy can do this, and I can see what people can do, and I have a lot of respect for their jobs. I mean, I don't feel like I'm an artist and I'm above it all. No. You can put me in a quarry and I would be so interested in what the guy is doing in a quarry. I'm every day taking an interest in something who's not art. I love that. I don't want to look at my own navel. And when people come to my studio, like collectors or something, then I'm always fascinated about what they do. And I don't think what they do is something less artistic or less noble. I want to learn. I want to learn from everybody. And as an exercise, I still do that. I mean, when I have a newspaper, I wouldn't go to the culture pages. I would write straight go to something who's so unartistic, like the economy or the geology, and that inspires me. You see, my source material is never purely artistic.
Belgian artist Wim d'Auvoir speaking there to Deborah McCoy, and his survey show is on at the Museum of Old and New Art, Mona, just outside Hobart, until the 2nd of April. And you also heard from Michaela Boland, national arts writer with the Australian newspaper, and Tim Steiner, also called Tattoo Tim, whose back is one of Wim d'Auvoir's designs. Many thanks to Deborah McCoy and John Jacobs for this feature. I'm Michael Sheriffs. And for more information about this or any other program, just go to the website abc.net.au/Radio National and follow the links to Creative Instinct.